हरि ओम सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 29, Adhyayana 3, Adhikarna 1, Realizations of Vyasadeva in Trance. The first step in refuting this misconception is to point out that an effect is always dependent on a cause, and that specific causes give specific effects. For example, one cannot make water taste sweet by adding salt. It follows, therefore, if the upadis are apparent realities, they cannot give rise to empirical realities. Right? Because if you have something that's not really there, it can't give rise to something that is there. Something that is there can give rise to something that's there. Something that's not there gives rise to something that's not there. Right? Beyond it being a pleasant reverie, no one really cares of a dream if in a dream he is crowned emperor of the world. Indeed, he may actually suffer by losing some tangible opportunity in the empirical world while wishfully dwelling on the sweet dream. However much he dreams, his apparent reality will never become an empirical one. It's just not going to come out as a external reality, no matter how much he just dreams about it, thinks about it, and all that. Right? Does that make sense? Because the dream is not the thing. As we said before, you have the aspect of this law of attraction. But the point is Krishna says in the Gita, by contemplating something, you become attached to it. And if you're attached to it, then you make an endeavor, right? Thinking, feeling, and then willing. Right? That's the whole point. So you think about it, then you'll have feelings. You feel, then you'll will. Then willing, then you'll actually do something. So that's just there. So this point is it can say, we'll get, but the point is the thinking about it doesn't produce it. It's only when you actually tangibly act, you get a tangible result. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. The final opinion for the Mayavadis is to put Brahman in the same class as the sky, to relegate Brahman to an empirical reality. That leaves us with no absolute reality, in which case the whole idea becomes absurd. For logically, absolute reality must exist, and the Vedas and numerous saintly persons confirm this fact. Right? So eventually they just make it into a mundane thing. You take it as it's spiritual, but you show that it's not. How they're presenting it, suddenly you say, it's not actually real, it's just apparent. Then you say that doesn't make sense, so then they'll turn it just into like the sky. Because generally you see that's how they use their examples, right? Thus, all these examples are unsuitable, and doctrines of Paricheda and Pratibimba are good only as mental exercises. They give no logically sound explanation for how Brahman, by adulteration with upadis, manifest as many, namely as Ishwara and Jivas. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushana. Bifurcation and reflection of Brahman by unreal upadis is now refuted. Avidyaka means false, like thinking a rope is a snake. Bifurcation and reflection caused by false upadis are also false, since nothing actually occurs. By showing examples of real upadis, where a pot divides up the sky and the water in a pot produces a reflection of the sky, one cannot prove a claim depending on falsity of Ishwara and Jiva like a dream. since they are supposed to be one conscious, since they are supposed to be one consciousness alone. Right? So, if it's not there, you can't say it's there. And then, you know, saying that it's false because they're not there, but there's one consciousness, then why there's two? And why they're separate and conscious? Why is it if we're all one consciousness, why do we have separate consciousness? Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. If the upadis are false, then bifurcation and reflection of Brahman is also false. It is contradictory to use real pots and real water and pots as an example for unreal upadis. Showing the example of pot and water in a pot, is a real occurrence, whereas what is to be proved, vidya and avidya covering Brahman, is not a real occurrence. It is impossible to combine the two on the basis of similarity, since there is no similarity at all. So you have a pot, just a pot, an empty pot, and then you have a pot with water. So the pot that empty, then that's covering a particular area of Brahman, or reflecting the Brahman, but it's not actually a separate entity. Right? It looks like it, but it's not. So then the difficulty comes is then you're saying about the jiva, avidya, and vidya. But then how do those connect to pot? And like, what's the commonality between knowledge and a pot? You can say earth and a pot. You understand? There has to be something common. But you can't take avidya and a pot or knowledge and a pot. Right? Because otherwise, then if it's about, you know, the pot brings about knowledge, then either, you know, potters or hippies really know what's going on. Right? Does that make sense? You know, and let alone a hippie that makes pots. Right? That's the perfection, right? Yeah. So that's the problem, is that it doesn't connect. But they're trying to make a connection. Because in an analogy, there must be something similar. But here it's not. They're just projecting these things. So it's not there. And then they're saying, see? But nothing's there. Sri Jiva Toshani. In an analogy, there must be some similarity between the example and the subject. The more similarities, the stronger the analogy. If there's no similarity, the analogy does not serve as an example. In the example of a pot and the sky, there is no similarity between Brahman and the sky. As the upadi, the pot is empirical, not apparent, as assumed here in the case of upadis of Brahman. Right? Because Brahman has no upadis according to their definition. Right? And so then, taking that as their definition, they can't say the sky that has upadis can therefore be contained in a pot. Because Brahman, having no upadis, you can't contain it in a pot, because it is the pot. Right? So, in the example of the world being a dream, which the impersonalists offer to prove the illusory nature of the world, although the upadi, a dream, is only apparent, there is no similarity between the dream world, apparent reality, and the material world, empirical reality. If a person commits murder in a dream, he is not hanged for it. But in the phenomenal world, he must face prosecution for such an act. So it is illogical to say that the world is illusory like a dream. Sin and piety, which pollute or purify the heart of the doer, are not applicable in dreams, but they give their sweet or bitter fruit in the phenomenal world. Hence, the example of a dream has no similarity with the material world. The reason the dreaming analogy is used in the scriptures is only to inspire a sense of detachment for those persons desiring to walk in the path of transcendence. Right? So then you bring about this aspect of a dream. Because in a dream, it means it has no real reality. So the point is the material world, the phenomena is there, right? So it exists. But the thing is it has no connection with the soul. There's nothing similar. Right? So that's where it's a dream. The dream is that you think this has something to do with that. It's a bad analogy. So because it's a bad analogy, like a dream, it doesn't have an actual connection. And so this analogy, as being pointed out, is given for those desiring to walk the path of transcendence. So they switch to the spiritual reality instead of the material reality. Right? Thus, the theory of bifurcation and reflection of Brahman is a manifestation of ignorance only. According to what was said, it is impossible to establish tat-tat yavas tapayitum, creation of Ishwar and Jiva by bifurcation, tena, or reflection, tena, which do not even exist, apra tena. Right? So then, because these examples that they're using are in ignorance, then how will they understand? Because they're not even using knowledge, really. Because they don't have a proper understanding of Brahman, the Jiva, and the material energy. So they're actually functioning in ignorance. Just very fancy intellectual ignorance, but ignorance nonetheless. Is that something? It's still the same thing. So then they're not going to be able to establish all these points that they're dealing as if they're dealing in knowledge. So only Vyasadeva, he's dealing in knowledge. But they're approaching that, and their interpretation is in ignorance. So then all the things they come up with don't make sense. Right? Yes?
Do they accept the existence of individual soul?
No.
Only Brahman, that's it.
There's all this Brahman. Means, but at the same time, as an individual, they'll be endeavoring, and they're trying to get other souls to endeavor. But if it's all Brahman, what does it matter? And then why would Brahman be doing this? And so the answer to that, I mean, I'm not sure if it's a regular thing, but I've heard it before. It's pastimes. The pastimes then means there's personality, there's desire and all that, which doesn't apply to Brahman. So that can't be the answer. So they don't have any answer for any of these things. But Shankaracharya then cleverly came up with answers so that it would seemingly satisfy the intellect of those who have the desire to control and enjoy. Because to control and enjoy, you're doing it as an individual, right? It's not a collective. You might, if it's advantageous for you as an individual, you might work as a collective. But it's only what the individual would get from that collective. That's why when the concept of collectiveness gets to the point where the individual doesn't benefit, it's just that the so-called, you're saying it's good for the collective, but the point is there's no individual's benefit. Then how is the collective philosophy has lost its effectiveness, right? And if we talk about the freedom, if the freedom comes to the point where each individual is only working for themselves at the detriment to everyone else, then the individuality aspect has lost its purpose. Because we're all living entities, there has to be a cooperation. So the balance between the individual and the collective has to be there. The difficulty is that when you're taking an individual's perspective, it's always going to be out of balance because it's going to favor their position. So in other words, it'll favor my position and getting everybody else to favor my position. So that's why then you have to have the direction given by those who are beyond the modes of nature, because then they know actually what's beneficial and what is the balance. That's why then we use the Vedic authority. You know, I said before, it's a chinti, it's beyond. We are not going to understand it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, because of that, then it must be established. And then you can get this balance. So the problem comes up here is that because of their own individual perspective, they themselves want to be unlimitedly happy. But they can't do it by karma, so they're doing it by negation. They can't do it by the positive, they do it by the negative. But that's all within the material, which is still all negative.
Yeah. Also, I was thinking that you mentioned that the philosophy itself is an ignorance.
Yes.
So it will attract, because most they attract
yes.
the same. So it
yes.
will attract that kind of people.
Yes.
Then they will follow. Others can't understand what's their philosophy.
Yes, no. Because then you get, when people have some more sentiment like that, then they're not going to appreciate this. But at the same time, it's not that they're not impersonal, but they're just going on to the one is the intellectual concept of impersonal. That unlimited. The other one is the unlimited feeling of the particular sentiment. Right? When the sentiment and the mood is right and everything's right, you click into the unlimited, you know, into Brahman. And so that feeling, then they get it from there. Is that someone else gets it from doing the duty, and that they've done the duty, and they connect into that unlimited aspect. You know, so there's always, everybody's trying to connect into that, into Brahman. Right? So or Paramatma, but it's still it's the you could say the localized aspect. It's personal, but only localized to your thing. So it's not exactly impersonal, but it's not exactly personal. You know. And so then, like that, then they have the, like you said, the different modes attract different people. And because of the difference in the modes, they can't see how the other person's position has any validity. That's why we have to hear from those beyond. We have to hear from Scripture. Otherwise, we won't know how it functions. And in that, the Scripture, it's not the detail, the rule that's the important thing. It's the, it's the principle that's there. That's what will define how it works. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, we have the blue, red, and yellow. So then, by combining that, we get different colors. So, the basic point is that's the principle that you're using. And then, depending upon the proportion of each or combination, you get the various colors. Right? So now what happens is people are not looking at this principle. And then it's just a matter, okay, well, green is that a color? You know, and then you get purple, is that a color? You know, does that make sense? Yeah. They're not taking it back to us, you're combining these three. Well, how is that? This is different than those three. You understand? Yeah. So they're only seeing the secondary. They're not seeing the principle that's there. So that's the advantage of the Vedic. The principle is being given, and then based on that, you have to see the detail. So then we see in the Upanishads, they'll point out the principle, and then it's up to you to figure it out. The Puranas, it will give the principle and then show example of how it's been applied. Right? So that's why it's considered better. The Puranic explanation is better because it shows the example and it brings it in the context of your life in a wider range than just the reasoning. Right? So, but the difficulty comes up, as we're seeing, is that if we're not taking that example and then trying to apply that by the principle into our life, then we still won't understand. Does that make sense? You know, it's like Prithu Maharaj is protecting his citizens. And then the earth isn't cooperating. So then the earth gets chastised so that the citizens can be protected. Now if someone in administration says, well, I'm not in charge of the whole earth. I can't, you know, run around the universe chasing Bhumi Devi. So therefore, I can't protect the citizens. They're missing the whole point. It's about protecting. So what is within your control, that's what you see is being used to establish protection for the citizens. That's the principle. Does that make sense? So that's where the thought process must come in. You know? Does that make sense? Another and more pleasant way of what we said last night. And this is just showing, this is what's expected. Because what happens is that we see the secondary. And then don't change it. Just like, let's say I say, okay, if you're going to, let's say, stir fry some vegetables, then you're going to, you know, the pan's going to be hot, you put your spices in that, and some kind of ghee or oil, and then, you know, some viscous liquid, and then you're going to put in the vegetable, and depending on and put a lid on it, you know, like that, and it'll fry and steam at the same time, like that. And if it's a little drier, you might have to add a little water, or if it's somehow or another more wet, sometimes you may have to leave the lid off. But basically, that recipe that I've given there, you can cook any vegetable, literally. Okay? So that's the principle we've given. Now a hand goes up. What about if you're cooking potatoes? It's a vegetable. You put it in the pot. You put the spices and all the things like that. And then you apply it. Okay. Like that. So you put the lid on it, and then you do like that and all that. So then it's a little dry, so you have to put water, right? Yes, that's what we said. That's the principle, how the recipe works. Okay. What if they're really fresh potatoes? We've just taken out, so a little bit more moist and all that, and that, then you don't have to put the water. It's like that. But what if you're cooking zucchini? Now, zucchini is much more wet than potatoes. You understand like this? So in this way, we go through all the vegetables. Because what's happening here? The brain is not working. We're only reacting. It's simply an emotional reaction. And this is exactly what we're talking about. We want to stop seeing that kind of questions. And then another person. So then we can use ghee, right? Yeah, that is a viscous liquid. Yeah, okay, but if we don't have ghee, can we use oil? Yes, that's also a viscous liquid. So then if we have oil. What about can we use olive oil and all that? And says, yes, it's also a viscous liquid. Well, what about peanut oil? Okay, yeah, you can. What about, I mean, heard in South India that in Tamil side, they use sesame oil. Yes, it's also a viscous liquid. But in Kerala, they use coconut oil. Do we understand what's going on here? This is what we're talking about. This is what has to stop. Right? This is what has to stop. So from now on, if this kind of question comes up, we will mention that you're doing this. Does that make sense? Yes.
I was thinking also that this kind of question, those who poop, they won't ask those questions, because once you cook, three times you figure it out.
Right.
But because we don't have experience in say, like, Pragnup Sadhana or Bhav Sadhana.
Right.
Then why we ask for every little detail? Because we don't have experience in that area.
But there's another element that's here. Is that, yes, that's true, what you're saying. But at the same time, when it gets up to prema, we don't ask any questions.
Yeah, because that's too far.
Yeah, but the thing is what is there in the Raganuga Sadhana that the doubts come up? We've heard from people who have heard from people they shouldn't have heard from. Right? So there's a general principle there. You know, it's like you take Vaishnavism, upper sampradaya means what? The principle, it is Vaishnavism mixed with something else. Right? It doesn't mean just karma and jnana. It means other practices or philosophies. Right? So sahaja means it's Vaishnavism mixed with Buddhism. Sahaja and Buddhism. Like that. Or the, what do you call it? The Dharavesh. It's Vaishnavism mixed with the Islam. Like that. Or caste Goswamis. That's Vaishnavism mixed with Smarta. You understand? So you can take it and mix it with anything. So then when people come up with all these modern kind of social issues, it's just Vaishnavism means the Vaishnav philosophy, right? Means, in other words, generally the philosophy is fairly straight. It's the religion that's mixed. Right? So they use some Vaishnava aspects of religion, but they also use something else. But if you use impersonalism, then they may use the proper religion, but they're mixing the philosophy. So that's how you get the upper sampradayas. So it's the same principle here, is that someone's asked that, so then what comes up is that, but in Radhakund they say this, and okay, you take care. But in Govardhan they say that it's the same principle. It's been mixed. We know what the real thing is. So we have to go back to that point. So it's fine that we can't work it out. That's not a problem. In other words, if in trying to understand it, one doesn't have enough experience, so you ask a question. But if it's just a knee-jerk reaction. You have that? You know that one? Yeah. Maybe it's more of an American thing. Or gut reaction, or emotional reaction. It's just comes up, oh, there's this, because you think about that, oh, yeah, But have you thought? No, it's just that that triggered. It was just a trigger. You know, like nowadays, that's a difficulty dealing with the modern kind of politically politically correct environment. Everything's a trigger. So in other words, they're not thinking about it. They're not trying to understand the principle you're making. It's just you used a word that they use differently, or that word is an issue for them, so they're triggered, and then they immediately react to that. So that's going on in the greater environment. So we're just trying to point out, as Vaishnavas, we should try to be a little less affected by this greater environment. We should try to use the intelligence. Okay. Right? So if we don't understand, find, ask, but it can't be, but we have to have tried to think about it. We can't just react. Otherwise, as we said, we can go through unlimited amounts of vegetables. You know? Does that make sense? Does that work? Yeah? Okay. Thus, the categories shown by Vyas are true, since the counter proposals have been defeated. Right? So how Vyas shows as Chit Achit Ishwara, that's the actual points, and their relationship and all that. Riti, still more refutations of impersonalism are rendered in the next Anucheda. So the foundation has been there, and then there'll be these subtle little details that they'll get into. Anucheda 40. This philosophy ends in two elements, Brahman and ignorance. Right? So one end is Brahman, the other end is ignorance. Brahman is pure since it can never be subjected to ignorance, being conscious alone at all times. Because of a relationship with ignorance, which is impurity, jiva arises. When Ishwara arises from Brahman, giving shelter to Maya produced by jiva's ignorance. Oh, then Ishwara arises from Brahman, giving shelter to Maya produced by jiva's ignorance. Right? So this is the element where the jiva then is said to be the one producing Maya. But it hasn't been pointed out how where the ignorance came from, and therefore, you know, how that will affect Brahman, since Brahman is always pure. But they're just taking it as a granted. You know? Is that? When Ishwara arises from other jivas arise by Brahman being the subject of that same Maya. And so this seemed to have had to have been the original jiva. Oh, this is now the jiva issue. Okay, this one. Okay, this is a further one because the other ones couldn't answer the questions. So now they've come up with this one where there's one jiva, and because of them, then there's Maya, and then an Ishwara comes up who controls Maya, and now you get the covering of Brahman by all the other jivas. So then the problem comes up is, so why work so hard yourself? Everyone should just work together to find that one jiva who's the cause of all this problem and all that. And then when they stop thinking in this way, then all the other jivas will just disappear and everything will be Brahman. Right?
Hollywood movie.
Yeah, yeah.
You kill the main one and everything.
Yeah, yeah, and then everything else goes. Yeah, like that. So, yes. Thus, Brahman is filled with contradictions. Ignorance exists in the pure consciousness, and vidya exists in the entity called Ishwara, and upadi created by the ignorance. Right? So knowledge is created by an upadi of ignorance, and then Brahman exists in pure consciousness. But we're saying there is no upadi, so how can there be ignorance in pure consciousness? Though appearing to be a thoughtful theory, it is actually cheating. The contradictions should be considered, right? So that's the thing, is the Vaishnava philosophy, especially when it's explained by the Acharyas, is just so clear that we take it that is, you know, it is simple, it is that easy, but it just needs regular practice, right? Because we've been doing things that aren't standard for a long time. So that's then, you know, necessary. Then we see as the interesting thing comes up, is that a lot of times something we can't understand, we consider, oh, it must be higher. It's more technical, it's higher. Like I mentioned, that one really big I mean, who owned this company, he made all the bus bodies for everything in East India. So that's a lot of buses. You know, it's a huge thing. That was then. That was back in the. That was 70s. Yeah, that would have been 70s. So much, so wealthy, this man. But he had this one set of one yogi's books, and he said that he reads it because he'll consider himself very smart because he's making more money than everybody else combined. So that means on the material platform he's smart, but when he reads this yogi's books, he can't understand a word the guy's saying. So his conclusion is, he must be so intelligent that it's no one can understand. Right? Because he talks business, no one understands what he's talking about. And at the same time is, this guy's talking philosophy, I don't understand it, I'm a smart guy, so he's even smarter. Right? So it's a common, you know, material concept that if you don't understand it, it must be smart. So that's what's been going on here. Though appearing to be thoughtful, a thoughtful theory, it is actually cheating. The contradiction should be considered. Right? So that's the difficulty that comes up, is that it appeared because he can't understand it because it doesn't make sense. Not that we don't understand it, it's because it's beyond our understanding. They're presenting it within the realm that you can understand it because they're using mundane knowledge within the mundane sphere. But it's not understandable, means they don't understand what they're talking about. What we're saying is what's beyond in the spiritual platform can't be understood by mundane intelligence. It's a chintya, so you just have to accept it. Because it's beyond, it's in an area that you don't know. Does that make sense? Anucheta Pakashika, from Sri Jiva Toshini. Having denied the validity of the two basic monistic theories, Pratibimbavad and Paricchedavad, now Jiva Goswami turns his attention to the spurious Ekajivavad, the one Jivavad, or doctrine of one Jiva. He will also examine the inherent contradiction in Brahman's perfection and the superimposition of avidya. Srila Jiva Goswami points out the following contradictions within the monism proposed by Shankarites. How can a portion of Brahman, which is pure consciousness, fall into the domain of Maya and think of itself as Jiva? Knowledge and delusion cannot have the same basis, just as light and darkness cannot have the same source. Besides, Brahman, being invisible, indivisible, permits no such fragmentations as the manifested Jivas. Moreover, on the absolute plane, no Maya or avidya is present, only Brahman. Either Brahman must degrade itself to the empirical level of Maya to be adulterated by upadis, or Maya has to elevate itself to the absolute level to influence Brahman. No possibility of the former exists, because Brahman, being devoid of attributes, cannot change itself. The latter opinion gives rise to dualism, because Maya and Brahman would have to stand on a common platform on the absolute plane. Right? Because Brahman, being one, there's no attributes, you couldn't have Maya arising, because where would it arise from? You're saying that no, but Maya is there, and it comes up to the platform of Brahman. Then that means now you have dualism, because now you have Brahman on the absolute platform and Maya on the absolute platform. Right? This, of course, runs counter to monism. Right? So they're defeating their own philosophy. Srila Jiva Goswami further says that the Mayavadis believe that after Brahman comes under the influence of avidya, he is called Jiva. Then this Jiva creates Maya by his imagination. Right? So they're taking the thing that all this is, you're bringing into the area of that, you're saying it's all illusion. But they're taking it that it doesn't exist. But it exists, it's just temporary. That's why we say it's illusion. Because it's not on the platform of the soul, the eternal platform. And so then you have the aspect of that he has these desires in that which aren't actually real for the soul. There's something you can contemplate, but they're not. And then he goes after trying to fulfill them. So this aspect of renunciation, which we're mentioning illusory aspect, then they're saying that this jiva, now by that illusion, now is creating maya. Right? What we're saying is, no, they're not creating maya, they're just functioning within the modes of maya. Maya already has the whole thing worked out. What is the subtleties and what is the gross? Then you may play with it on the subtle platform with the mind and endeavor for it on the gross platform with the senses. Right? So, but it's illusory because it's not actually beneficial to the soul. But they're taking that and trying to say that from my contemplation, I'm creating all this. But if the other one didn't work, that by thinking about it, it just happens, the apparent goes into this. Why would this work? Right? Because they're just trying to find some reason how their philosophy stands. So now we see is there's two main ones. That's given by Shankara. I think this Ekajiva is coming later. I don't think it's Shankara's. But it's his followers. They've because the other two have been defeated, they've come up with this one. Right? So, less clever. Yes?
Can we say that all the Mayavadis accept the theories? Or they have groups?
All three. Do they?
Groups.
You know, it's just like each one, the other ones, you know.
Going to help?
Yes, basically. Standard.
Yeah, right. The younger brother, because they're not as smart, but we accept them. They have that kind of...
Yeah, they're kind of like within the... Yeah, you know, so if it's between non-theists and theists, then all those who are theists are in one group. But then when there's no non-theists, then the theists fight amongst each other. Right? And then when you've reduced it down to your particular theistic group, then it's within that. And just, it keeps going until it's between you and everybody else in the family. Yes.
And what would be the most common understanding of the Mayavadi?
The most common is...
Like what he... What
well, the first two are the most common, right?
Yeah, more than that, what Jiva Goswami is pointing out here, there is Brahman and there is ignorance. Avidya and Brahman, this is their basic point.
Okay.
That there is Avidya, which is like eternal existence, is Brahman. Then all the philosophies with particular names are actually named and coined by somebody else. Shankaracharya just describes how these two are working simultaneously. He doesn't propose any single philosophy.
Okay.
And then he introduces the concept of imposition, which the last point which we were discussing.
Okay.
Through that, everybody started
makes their own. Oh, okay, so it's like Ramanuja and the Watergalai and Tengalai. Okay. So, yeah, so it's all originally based on Shankara's commentaries. But then they make it into the groups because they understand one or one understand the other. The idea is you catch the wide range and bring them into the Vedic fold. But having come into it, you only need that enough to get them out of Buddhism. And once they come into that, then they're supposed to take up the Vaishnavism. But then those who don't, then they have to sit there in that and then try to make some sense out of it. So then they start developing these groups. And I'm sure that there's even groups within these groups, you know.
Vachaspati Mishra, after him, there are recent ones who said he's also wrong and then they are better than him.
Yes, yes. It keeps going. It just keeps going. Right,
right, but this Anacharya is like summarily defeating the whole Shankara's points.
Oh, bringing this up and then defeating anything.
Yeah.
Any last little vestiges of, you know, the... What about if we're, how you say, you know, trying to stir-fry watercress? They're going into that one. Yeah, okay.
Can we say that Mayavada is the theory? Is it prominent only in Kali Yuga?
Is Mayavada prominent only in Kali Yuga? Yes, because it's a derivative of Buddhism. Not that someone might not have it in other ages, but the point is it's not going to flourish. Impersonalism in, but that will be Brahmavad. But in the Kali Yuga, then it goes into this Mayavad, where it's not actually about Brahman. Because an actual Brahmavadi doesn't have a problem with these other aspects, because it's all Brahman. They're just looking at it in a very simple way, that everything's Brahman. So Paramatma is also Brahman, Bhagavan is Brahman, the Jivas are Brahman, the material world's Brahman. So they don't have a problem with variety, because it's all Brahman. So they're actual, that's the actual Brahmavadis. While Chakra presents himself as if the philosophy, as if they're Brahmavadis, but they're not, they're Mayavadis, because it's all based on Maya. Because Brahmavadis means it's only Brahman. But their philosophy comes up because of the introduction of avidya or maya. Because if there's no maya, then they don't have any, there's nothing to do. So once you add maya, then it's a matter of who's covering who and what and this and that. And so then they get, so it's all illusion. While for the Brahmavadis, like Sukadeva Goswami, then it's all Brahman. So he can see, he sees the variety, he sees the different things, and he discusses on Brahman. Then when he comes to the point of hearing about Krishna's pastimes, then he moves from Brahman up to the Bhagavan platform. Same with the Kumaras. They're on the Brahman platform. So they're going to visit Lord Vishnu. Because he's also an aspect of Brahman, and a very special and wonderful aspect of Brahman. So they're going to see him. Right? It's much more interesting than your common people who are absorbed in illusion. And so when they go there and they contact and they smell the tulsi at the Lord's lotus feet, then it gives them a transcendental experience that is beyond the transcendental experience of understanding everything is Brahman. So they understand there's something higher, the personal aspect. So then they take up being devotees. Then they switch from just being jnanis to shantabhaktas. Okay, does that make sense? So there's no problem between Brahmanandis and Vaishnavas. It's just that they're situated there, but they don't have any... there's no contrary opinions about Brahman and Paramatma. I mean, Bhagavan and Paramatma. So they can come across these if they get that experience, because they're liberated. So if they come in contact with the practices of pure Vaishnavas, then they'll see the difference. While for the Mayavadis, they're just saying it's all illusion, there's nothing. So they're Buddhists, actually. So it's not Vedic. Yes. Which one's higher? You can probably say each one is lower than the other. It's a competition. The benefit of the Mayavad is they accepting the Vedic literatures. So if they're actually more sincere, then when you explain the Vedic literatures in the proper understanding, then they would be able to appreciate and move to Vaishnavism. So that'll be a weakness in the Buddhism, because they're not accepting the Vedic literatures. Then you have the other aspect, is the Buddhism doesn't have any preconceived elements of the Vedic, and so they're not necessarily making any disturbances there. They create their own disturbances from their own literature. And so then from that way, then they're not actually offensive. They just say there's nothing. So it's wrong, but like that. So the Mayavadis would be offensive there. Does that make sense? So it's kind of like they're the same, basically. But the point is since people see from the external, since the Mayavadis are following the Vedic culture, it'll be easier for them to take part in devotional activities. While for the Buddhists, their religious process they're using is different, so it may be more difficult for them to take part. So that's why then Shankara brought the Buddhists back into the Vedic fold, so then they can hear from the Vaishnava acharyas and take up devotional service. Yeah?
Right. We usually see what is the attitude of people and motivation of the group are to do nothing because of their frustration.
Yeah? Same with the Mayavadis.
Mayavadis, they want to be what?
But that's because of their frustration. It's just a matter of, due to frustration, you either become God or you become nothing. It's a natural progression. Means I am, you know, I am the supreme controller and enjoyer, and following the law, karma, then I try to enjoy. Getting everything, I'm not enjoying, so therefore I renounce, and then I become God. When I don't get any satisfaction from that, because that doesn't work either, then I get frustrated and say there's nothing. So it's based on anger. So in that way you can say the Buddhism is the lowest. But the point is it's not that the Maya bodies are necessarily in that much of a better position, other than you can discuss the Vedic philosophy. These other things. So it is the plan of the Lord, but basically they're both, means in the Vedas you see that they're always avoiding Buddhists. Right? So it's the philosophy has always been there. It's just a matter of it then in its being a broad practice that a lot of people are involved. Because the original Buddha and the original Jinnah, then they go back, you know, to, you know, the origins of creation. When the demons, because they make trouble, then from making that trouble, they're making the trouble by properly following the Vedic culture, but not for the purpose of elevation. Just for the purpose of material benefit. So they're worshipping the guru, they're performing austerities, they're doing yajnas, they're studying shastras, and because of this, they're becoming more powerful than the demigods. Right? Because the demons, they generally don't do these things, and the demigods are more powerful, so they ask, why are they more powerful? So Sukracharya said, because they do these three. So then they took them up, with, you know, under the direction of Sukracharya. And they become more powerful than the demigods. Because the demigods will do those things, but because of their, you know, being what they always do in their material desires, they won't always do it the best. While the demons, they're just focusing on following Guru at this point, and so they're getting the better results. So they go to Vishnu, and then you know, so going to Vishnu, then they, you know, say their problem. I mean, Vishnu already knows why they're coming, so he asks if anybody, you know, he's going to give a solution, but if anybody would like to come back to Godhead before he arranges the solution, then step forward. Right? No one steps forward because, you know, someone forgot to turn off the gas, someone has to, you know, drop the kids off at the dentist, you know, someone has to pick the kids up after school, so nobody steps forward. So then from behind Vishnu, then from one side comes the Adi Buddha, and the other side comes the Adi Jinnah, or the Adi Jain, right? And so then these, you know, non-Vedic philosophies, then they go down because they're following the Vedas for mundane purposes, just to defeat the demigods and upset the balance of the universe. Then these, you have to take people away from the Vedas. So then they came, and then they preached. The ones doing yajna, then Buddha went and preached there, you know, about ahimsa and all this. So they gave up the performance of the yajnas. To the ones, you know, studying the scriptures or doing austerities, he says, you know, Jinnah, why are you doing this? And says, because of this benefit. And says, well, maybe you'll get that, but maybe you won't. So he just bewilders them. Right? Because that's their philosophy. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. It just keeps them speculating. And so then they gave up all those things, and then the demigods, you know, attained their previous position. So these philosophies are always there. The six systems of philosophy are always there. The Buddhism, Jainism is always there. You know, the bogusness within the Vedic is always there. Because the, Indra, then in that pastime when they stole the horse, then he took up who was pursuing?
The son of
Prithu Maharaj himself, yeah. And, you know, so Prithu Maharaj can control and catch the earth and make it do what he should do. Indra can't do that. So Indra knows he's more powerful. So he just takes, he just changes himself into the dress of a sannyasi. And then runs off, because then he won't Kuntumaras won't bother him because now he's a Brahmin, he's a sannyasi. But it's a bogus sannyasi because it's about his own personal benefit. That's the only reason he has the dress. It's not about spiritual life. So that starts all the bogusness that comes from that. So these things are always there. It's just a matter of when they manifest that there's more. You know, it's just like you always have people that are outside the Vedic system and just do what they want. But there's less of them. But then in Kali Yuga, they become the prominence. Right? You know, the Mlechas, Yavanas are always there. It's just they're smaller groups. But then in Kali Yuga, they become the prominence. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Yes.
Yeah. He's telling that when Madhvacharya was preaching, prominent Buddhists, they didn't agree with him and they went away. But Mayavadis, he could transform and they became some of the foremost followers of Madhvacharya.
Okay, so the Buddhists wouldn't convert. Yeah, because the religion's so different and all that, the perspective, the authority, and that, so it's just farther away. And that's the whole point, is that you're misusing something, then you take them farther away from that so they forget about it. Then, having forgotten about it, then you bring them back in. But you bring them back in stages. So first it's from Buddhism, then to Mayavad, then from Mayavad into the Vaishnava philosophy. Then from that into then Lord Chaitanya, then he comes and then gives the Achinta Veda Veda Tattva. Right? So that's it. Srila Jiva Goswami further says that the Mayavadis believe that after Brahman comes under the influence of avidya, he is called Jiva. Then this Jiva creates Maya by his imagination. A portion of Maya, so again, they're still there, the controller and the enjoyer. Right? So that's always there throughout their whole philosophy. So whatever point, that's the common point that may be there. Because we may ask, why do they come up with these things that are unintelligent? Is why do the Karmis come up with all the things that are unintelligent? Because of karma and jnana being the basis of their philosophy. So they're also doing it here. They're just doing it in the negative. A portion of Brahman then gives shelter to this Maya and becomes known as Ishwara, or the Lord. From then onwards, Maya always follows Ishwara's dictum and then influences the Maya-covered Brahman, now called Jiva. So Ishwara is the basis of Maya, and Jiva is her Vishaya, or subject. Right? So she is, directing everything towards the Jiva, but only because the Jiva has then, by his imaginative, created her. And then Brahman, accepting this creation, now he becomes Ishwara. And then he controls Maya, who now controls the Jiva. But all this is the Jiva himself, his imagination. That's the whole point. None of this exists if you... That's the whole point. So the arguments are just bringing it back to how this doesn't match their definition of Brahman. Or if they're going to bring out personal aspects of Brahman, we'll accept that and then take that forward into Bhagavan realization. Like we saw before, if they want to say it's the mercy of Brahman, we'll accept that. It is the mercy of Brahman. And so therefore, if it's the mercy of Brahman, that means then there's the qualities, there's that individual consciousness, there's all these, you know, desire. And so then Brahman, you know, has that, and we accept that. So that is known as Parabrahman. Right? The feature that they're talking about originally is Brahman, but to make the whole philosophy work, Brahman's not enough. You have to understand Parabrahman.
Brahmavatins did not bring the concept of the introduction of Upadis, that is Mayavadis, they speak about the Upadis, and when Upadis come, then you have so many different philosophies and their theories coming.
Yes.
You see
also? Yes. Okay.
Right. Would they say why this Jiva is creating Maya? Do they have any reason?
No. I haven't heard. They have a reason why he wants to create Maya. Where did the Jiva come from in the first place?
No, the point is, if they say there is Jiva, they have to explain why is not the control. Why is the material world and suffering?
Yes.
For that they have to say that there is Maya.
Yeah. And Maya is controlled by Ishwara because somebody's controlling Maya. But why the jiva is there, or why he's, you know, has the desire, that they're not explaining. Okay. And it doesn't, so it's to help. Yeah. This is unintelligible. Their explanation is plagued with a logical defect called nanyon yasraya dosha, or the defect of mutual dependence. The existence of Maya is due to the jiva, and that of the jiva is due to Maya. Right? So without each other, they don't exist. And according to philosophy, there's only Brahman, so they don't exist. So, yeah. Without Maya, there's no jiva, and without jiva, there's no Maya. Then a part of Brahman becomes Ishwara by contact with Maya. But then Maya is subordinate to this Ishwara. See, so on both these things, there's mutual dependence. Even Ishwara cannot exist without the mercy of the jiva, who is further dependent on Maya. So ultimately, Ishwara is at the mercy of Maya. And Maya is at the mercy of this jiva. And where this jiva comes from, then again the point is that, you know, is Brahman is transformed, but Brahman has no qualities, or jiva is elevated up to this position, so then it becomes dualism. So again, the same problem. So it's always the same problems. They always have the same solutions that have the same problem. They just kind of adjust the positions. You know, it's like musical chairs. Yeah, you just, you know, the philosophy didn't work. Okay, so let's move it around like this. How about now? You know, like that. Yeah. These are some of the absurdities resulting from the acceptance of Parichedavad or Pratibimbavad. Srila Jiva Goswami says that other such inconsistencies should be searched out. For example, if originally there is only featureless Brahman and nothing else exists, then where does avidya come from? And if avidya can bind Brahman, it must be more powerful than Brahman. Here, Mayavadis compare Brahman to a spider that weaves its own cobweb, and somehow it gets bound by it. But this example would make Brahman energetic and a possessor of attributes, which plays them right back into the dualistic understanding. Right? So then that means he has qualities, he has this and that. So this, the problem is they're trying to take Parabrahman and Brahman and make them the same using Brahman's definition. But at the same time, they're still giving attributes of Parabrahman. But when you point it out, they'll say no. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Don't say that people buy that philosophy because they actually need to be justify whatever they're doing.
Yes, it's always a matter of justifying. So it's how I'm the controller and enjoyer. Then that's what you're justifying. You know, just like someone is justifying that their work. I'm just being practical. You know, you have to pay the bills, and people have desires, and you know, we're not, you know, impersonal, and we're not robots, we're not fanatic, we're, you know, like this. And so we're just trying to justify karma. Then someone else would be trying to justify the jnana. You know, and always it's not blind faith, it's not this and that, and you know, because if you can't speculate, then they'll say it's blind faith. But it's pointed out, it's beyond your speculative power. And then when all this doesn't work, then there's just the anger that you have to destroy everything, get rid of everything, and everything like that. So you have that, that group? Starts with an A. They always blow everything up.
Anarchists.
Yeah, they have their philosophy, and because they can't control it, can't make it work, can't enjoy it, can't control it, so therefore you just get rid of it. You know, so humans are making problems, get rid of all the humans, or get rid of industry, or get rid of the guy, you know, it's just, that's third stage. So, these are just three ways to try to justify your controlling and enjoying. It's just, each one of them's taking a prominence of another aspect. Right? So seemingly the one is in goodness, one's in passion, one's in ignorance. Because one's destruction, one's then passion and creating and enjoying that, and one's just, you know, stepping back and using the intellectual. Though they're all in ignorance. So it's just three different modes, whichever is there. But the fun part is they'll present it as the opposite. So the anarchists will present it as if it's really intellectual, when all they're doing is just, out of frustration, anger, destroying everything. It doesn't make any sense. Okay. Is that... You catch it? Yeah. Okay. Thus, the theory of monism proposed by Shankarites is not consistent, and hence those who are interested in spiritual advancement should reject it at any cost. Because anything staying, it's a problem. Just like if you have disease, you want to get rid of everything. Right? So, you know, it's just like if there's a fire, you get rid of all the fire, not just get rid of most of it and leave a little. Like that. Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan. So then the argument. Our conclusion is not bifurcation or reflection, since these are explanations made for the understanding of ignorant people. These guys are too much. Isn't it? Yeah. The conclusion is one jiva only. Right? Footnote 10. Baladev Vidyabhushan is here paraphrasing the philosophy of Ekajivavad. This theory emerged in response to the great Madhvaita Acharya Vyasatirtha's polemic work, Nyayamrita. In it, Vyasatirtha points out the gaping holes in Pratibimba and Parichedavad. The Mayavadi scholar Madhusudana Saraswati tactically accepted these weaknesses by stating that, actually, the theories of division and reflection are not essential to the doctrine, but simply offered as aids for the less intelligent. Right? Even up to that point, he was one of the less intelligent. Right? The truth, as he claims in his book, Advaita Siddhi, is the solipsistic idea that there is in fact only one jiva, who creates the world as his own illusion, including the illusion that other jivas exist. Because this Ekajivavad says that the glance, drishti, of the one and only jiva brings about the creation, srishti, of this world, is also called drishti srishtivad. You know, so they're taking it that the living entity. And so then, because that's how they've heard that, you know, the Puranas and that explain about that glance and all this. So then they're then saying, and then that creates the Maya, because you have Pradhan, and then you get the whole Maya. And then from there, and then that then controls. And then we see that the Lord who glanced, he also then enters that. So that's how then he accepts that he becomes Ishwar. So they're just taking these aspects of the primary creation of Karana Dakshai Vishnu and then Garbha Dakshai Kira Dakshai, and just perverting that into an impersonal kind of thing. You understand? So the jiva here, if it's supposed to happen, then it has to be Karana Dakshai. Right? But then the problem comes is that if he's Ishwar, then where does he come from? So they don't take it that far. They just go some jiva. Like that. But now in here, then, of course, it leaves the option that everybody who's thinking, accepting this philosophy, then, of course, they're the jiva. And everybody else, you just imagine it. You know? So, in other words, it's just a super insane, how you say, situation of schizophrenia. Right? Yes.
I think after now many years, even that didn't work. Then they shifted to software engineering and creating all artificial intelligence.
Yes, yes. And then they're worried it's going to, you know, take over and everything like that. And, you know, so. Okay, yeah, so it comes to, okay, so.
All the smart person.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Okay. That is described. Okay, the conclusion is one jiva only. That is described in the following: Saeva mayam parimohitatma shariram asthaya karoti sarvam. Shriyanna panadi vichitra bhogai saeva jagat paritushtitim eti. Paritushtim eti. This atma, bewildered by maya, situated in the body, does everything. In awakening, it becomes satisfied by various enjoyments like women, food, and drink. Kaivalya Upanishad. Right? So they're basing it on something. This atma bewildered, but then they're taking it with other things that mention atma, and then this, and they're making no... Remember, it's also Shankarshan is known as jiva. Right? So Mahavishnu is Shankarshan. So then they're going to attribute this aspect of jiva there. So they're going to take attribute, whatever fits. Those aspects of the jiva, those aspects of material nature, those aspects of the Ishwara, the Supreme Lord, that match in their philosophy, and just take them, whatever it is, and put it together as one mix. So then they come up with something a bit strange.
Okay, yeah. The next sandarbha goes onwards. Exactly, Jiva Goswami points out where from they have taken this, uh-huh. And shows the verses before, and shows that, see how they are cheating.
Mm. Yes. Yeah, because then you'll see it's just like in Vedanta Sutra.
Yes.
Is that they give the verse and they're giving that, but then the acharyas will point out, but if you go a few verses before that and a few verses after that, you can see they're talking one subject matter. And at the beginning and end, they're talking about it in one context. And so in the middle, they'll still be talking the same context. But the Mayavadis and all these other schools, they're taking the verse out of the context of the conversation and then just using it on its own. Shruti also says, Ekam Eva Dvitiyam. There is one entity without a second. Right? So before they would apply that to Brahman. Now they're applying this to the jiva. Right? Because if they apply it to Brahman, then how do you get all these other things? Because that means then Brahman has to have qualities, and they're trying to avoid that. So they're putting the qualities into the jiva. And now they're using this aspect of there's only one entity being Krishna. They're taking it to mean this jiva, whatever this jiva is. Do they have a name for this jiva? No? Okay. Thus there is one Atma, mere consciousness and nothing else. It produces maya made of the gunas as an effect of disturbance by avidya, and then produces one entity identified as I, aham artha, and many entities identified as you, yushmad artha, perceived objects. So then that means this one without a second. Then if it's Brahman, then it's producing maya made of the gunas. That means then there has to be those qualities within, in the original state, within Brahman to produce that. Because you have to be able to see the effect in the cause. Right? Or the cause and the effect, either way. So the point is they're saying Brahman has nothing to work with, but at the same time saying it's produced it. Right? So it's a problem. So they're using the Vedic things, but they're leaving out that these are talking about Mahavishnu. They're talking about the Supreme Lord. The entity with the identity of I is the Purush with his own form. The entities identified as perceived by Aham Artha are Mahatattva and other elements down to earth, which are all material and unconscious. Other Purushas of the same sort, and one special Purush called the Supreme Lord. Thus there are three varieties of objects perceived. So in here, this I is that jiva, not the Ishwara. Because in this explanation, it sounds more like it's the Ishwara. Or is there the aspect of where he's taking that on and then seeing everything else, then taking on the aspect of being Ishwara.
Yes.
So the same jiva is also becoming the Ishwara.
This jiva, because the original Brahman, because of ignorance, forms this jiva, Eka jiva. And this jiva creates maya.
Okay.
And that maya, again from the original Brahman, creates Ishwara.
Mm-hmm.
And then that Ishwara is controlling maya to control the jivas.
Yes.
That's how they go.
Okay.
How the original Brahman God is?
That they don't explain. The avidya, the source of
The avidya, where it comes from and where the qualities to do this creation come from, that they don't explain. It always falls apart here. Yes.
So, according to this philosophy, living entities, in which category do we fall?
We're illusion. We don't exist.
Oh, we just lie.
We're part of that illusion. We're part of the Mahatattva.
Oh.
It's just varieties of forms of Mahatattva.
So
but
it's his imagination.
Yes. But the point is if that's the case, why do we have to work so hard to try to get liberated and come back to there? Because we're illusion anyway. So what does it matter in the dream what goes? Like it says, in the dream you bring crowned the king. What does it matter? You know, so why is it now this king has to renounce and give up everything? Because it's a dream anyway. You know? So, you know, yeah.
The Mayavadis, they kind of accept the Supreme, but they don't accept his Shaktis.
Yes.
Prabhupada later points out that the scientists, modern scientists, they accept the Shakti, but they don't accept that it's the Supreme.
Yes.
It just switched from not accepting Shaktis and accepting Supreme to accepting Shaktis and not accepting
Supreme. Yeah. Yeah, so that's the, you know, one is the, what do you call it? One accepts the apparent, not the, what is it? Empirical. And the other accepts the empirical and not the apparent. Yeah. Again, and in both cases, they're wanting to be the Supreme.
That's the reason they don't.
The scientist wants to be the Supreme. You know, the same way the Mayavadi. So it's all the same. Yeah, they just switch it. And then that way, then there's no renunciation. Because like with Shaktas, there's not so much renunciation as there is with the, you know, like that. So. More fun.
Are they the perverted reflection? Scientists are perverted reflection of Mayavadis?
They're a perverted reflection of it's like that. Just keeps going. It's like when you have the two mirrors, and it keeps going. Yeah, so they're farther back. Yeah. Jiveshva bhashena karoti maya cha vidyas cha svayam eva bhavati. Maya and avidya appear by themselves and create jiva and ishwar as the shadows. The Sringatapani Upanishad. The Sringatapani. Okay, so they're taking some, okay. Okay. They're misapplying this one.
Yes.
Because this doesn't really go back.
Showing the verses which are misapplying.
Yeah, because this is Nisringatapani, so they're just misapplying. The other ones, it becomes easy enough to tell where it is. Here they seem to have completely misaligned how they're translating it.
That's how their definition, because this is in the Purva Paksha, he's just mentioning.
No, that's there. But I'm just wondering, what's the original of this? Okay. What would the Nisringatapani Upanishad be saying? Because it wouldn't be saying this. That's the whole point. Because the jiva, I understand, but the ishwara, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah, so the Ishwara meaning is the same as the Jiva, but they're taking Ishwara meaning the Supreme Lord.
Here, according to the Sanskrit, there is no Ishwara.
Yeah, they
go by Sanskrit, but they put that Ishwara.
They put the Ishwara. Yeah, they're trying to make it. So that so then it makes sense. Okay. By association with the Gunas, the capacity as agent and enjoyer is placed in Atma. Okay. No, we'll stop here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai, Gaura Premananda ki.